The scenes described in our readings from 2 Kings and Mark today are not your average run-of-the-mill, everyday occurrences. Far from it. The events described in these passages are cosmic, otherworldly. They involve interactions with another dimension of reality, with God even. And how often can any of us say these sorts of mystical, cosmic events have happened in our lives? Even if cosmic, mystical, and very real experiences with God and or God's messengers actually have happened to any of us, they certainly have not happened on a daily basis. If I'm wrong, please see me after the service. The events in our readings today give us scientific proof-oriented type folks a cause for pause. First, the time for the mentor prophet Elijah to enter his great reward has come. The young up-and-coming prophet Elisha has been determined by God to be Elijah's replacement. And it would have been made this story a bit more clear if the two prophets' names were not so close in our pronunciation. But this is the story as we have it. Elijah is making his way to the Jordan River, the place where he will be bodily returned to God. And he keeps urging Elisha to stay put, not to follow him on his journey. But Elisha refuses to stay behind. As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you, says Elisha. Other prophets join along the way, heckling Elisha, as it were. Do you know that today the Lord will take your master away from you? In other words, Elisha, this gig is coming to an end. Don't you know you're following a losing deal? Elisha says, I know. Keep silent. Finally, Elijah and Elisha arrive at the Jordan. And Elijah, in a display of power reminiscent to Moses in the Red Sea, strikes the water of the river with his mantle. The waters part, and the two cross over. Elijah asks if Elisha has a final request before he is taken from him, and Elisha says, please let me inherit a double share of your spirit. It's a great request. If I can't keep you here with me, if you cannot remain, let me inherit your spirit and more. And Elisha's response to the request is, well, maybe. If you see me being taken from you, then it will happen, and if not, it will not. And what Elisha is really saying here is, Elisha, a double portion of my spirit is not mine to give you. The gifts that you have and will have are given by God. And if God determines to give you a double share of my spirit, then it will be. But if not, then it is not to be. Sure enough, God breaks in with a chariot of fire and horses of fire, and Elijah is bodily assumed into heaven. He's taken up without facing death, at least not in any normal sense. And Elisha is a witness to this cosmic mystery and reacts by tearing his clothes in two, which certainly brings to mind the tearing in two of the curtains of the temple upon the death of Jesus, the time of the ultimate cosmic joining of heaven and earth. This story is filled with graphic imagery. Fire and chariots and horses, mantles that part seas and descend from the shoulders of the one being bodily assumed. It fills our imaginations, but perhaps puzzles our reason. The story of Mark and the account of the Transfiguration may do the same. The story from the New Testament a long time ago, but not nearly as long ago as Elijah and Elisha had that same mystery, that same cosmic interplay between heaven and earth. It also has the graphic imagery that fills our heads with pictures and our minds with questions. Jesus has taken his close friends Peter, James, and John with him on a hike up to the top of a mountain. Those three could not have had any idea what was about to happen. But that is the general state of affairs when you follow Jesus. No sooner have they arrived on the top of the mountain in Mark's telling of this event than Jesus changes. His appearance is like nothing they have ever seen before. He is glowing, like they remember hearing that Moses did when he came down from the mountain from talking to God. And next thing you know, Moses and Elijah show up right next to him. Peter, James, and John surely think they have become ill from the lack of oxygen on the top of this mountain. This is all of history. Up on top of this mountain, Moses representing the law, the Torah, and Elijah representing all the prophets. This is all too much, too good, too amazing. And Peter wants to build booths to keep this moment forever. Then a cloud overshadows them, just like the cloud that led their ancestors through the wilderness by day. And from the cloud comes a voice, and they knew it to be the voice of God, saying, "This is my son, the beloved, listen to him." And in that moment, just as quickly as the cosmic blending of heaven and earth happened, all was returned to normal. No Moses, no Elijah, no cloud, no glow. Just Jesus and his friends on top of a mountain. That letdown had to be phenomenal. We compare highlights in our own lives to this very event, calling them mountaintop experiences. And while I realize that not everyone has had what they would define as a spiritual mountaintop experience, we've all had times in our lives when we could say all was right with the world. Times when we were satisfied and even happy. We might have even felt invisible or like nothing could burst our bubble. Let me just take an aside for a moment and say, I do not believe a spiritual mountaintop experience is required for you to have deep faith and a wonderful relationship with Christ. Some people have those experiences, but it is not a requirement. Not everyone does. And if you don't, your faith is equally valid. Now back. Think for a moment if you can. And if you can't right now, think about it later. When you felt complete, like all was right with the world. You probably wanted to bottle it up just like Peter to keep it forever. And maybe you didn't even realize how right that moment was until it was over. This happens to me every single Christmas. Not actually on Christmas Day, but a couple of days after. The tree is still decorated and glowing, but the mound of beautiful presents is gone, along with the mounds of food. And most of all, the kids. The minute those taillights head down the driveway, my heart sinks to my toes, and I want to bring it all back and hold on to it and not let it go. And I could pontificate with platitudes about how we would never know how wonderful those wonderful moments are if we didn't have the down times too. And that's true and worth paying attention to. But there is another aspect of the after time that I think we need to pay attention to as well, especially when it comes to our relationship with Jesus and our life of faith. After all, Peter and James and John had an amazing experience on the top of the Mountain of Transfiguration, where they witnessed the joining of everything they knew, everything that had gone before, with the continued plan of God summed up in Jesus. There was no doubt in their minds that heaven and earth had come together in this moment to show them what God wanted them to see. And in an instant, it was gone. To say that this rush or thrill or was an adrenaline high has to be a gross understatement. And we wouldn't be surprised if Peter, James, and John spent the rest of their days searching for a new thrill, another emotional charge, something that made their blood stir, like the event on the mountain. That's not an uncommon reaction to having an experience that fills you, makes you feel like all is right with the world. Why not want to replicate that? And that's the danger. There should be a warning label on moments of certainty, especially if they are paired with emotional highs. The warning label should read this. This experience is for your benefit and is for one-time consumption. Attempting to replicate it could cause what could be hazardous to your spiritual health. Trying to replicate an emotional high or even a feeling of pure satisfaction is like searching for gold at the end of the rainbow. The odds are you'll spend all your time searching and all your energy looking for that high instead of living each day of your life. The question then is, how do we live in the after? How do we live out our faith? How do we live out our relationship with Jesus when the smoke has cleared, the glow has faded, the presents have been opened, and all that is left is us and Jesus and the world and all its needs? We can run around like addicts looking for another high. Plenty of folks do. Or we can fall into a blue funk, wishing that things were like they were when they were like that. Determined that church has nothing for us if it doesn't give us that boost. Or we can look to our friends, Elisha and Peter and James and John, and get on with our lives as God has set them before us. Each day offers us new opportunities just where we are. Whether the dusty roads of Jericho filled with lepers and demons or the asphalt streets of Anniston filled with our own forms of leprosy and possession, or just life, one day at a time, with challenges and joys enough to fill each day, if we stop searching for something else and slow down and pay attention. How do we live life in the after? Amen.